and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 162. I'm your host, Will Wilson, and with me today is Peter Willington.
Hello.
Keith Andrew.
Hello.
And John Jordan.
Hello.
Hello, chaps. Hello. I tried, you know how it's traditional for me to drink a pint or two of beer while I'm doing this? I tried to drink non-alcoholic beer.
That's not beer, though, is it? Non-alcoholic beer.
No, it's horrible. What the hell is it?
How far did you get?
Well, I got a few sips in, and I thought, what is this?
considering at the start of the podcast, I think it hasn't gone very well, has it?
No, well, yeah. I took a few sips while I was waiting for you guys talking away, yammering on. But yeah, no, it's horrible stuff.
Now you're just back to Class A drugs, as usual.
I just shut up, so it's cool. Anyway, yes, so we got some good stories coming up this week. It's actually not as game-focused on the... it is, I guess. It's related. But it's not going to be so much about specific games on the news. So there we go. That's the news coming up after this jingle. So first up on the news this week, it's a sort of a multi-part one. App Store fraud. Free charts in the US being manipulated by bot networks is the claim. This is a story that we noticed on forums of our good friends, posted by an anonymous developer. And then we went forward with it, did some investigations. Called people up, emailed them, journalism. And we got some quite interesting results, didn't we? Because the original claim was that advertisers were that they'd say, like, if you pay us $5,000, we'll get you guaranteed on the US App Store top free games chart. And of course, as you all know, like, I'm guilty of this as much as anyone else. When I go on the App Store, I look at the top charts and it's like, oh, yeah, that game looks good. I don't actually then search into the areas or anything like that. So it's one of the most highly, biggest profile you can get your game is to be on that chart other than featured by Apple. So people basically seem to be bending the rules a bit and using like a network of fake, computers that then have a...
Fake computers?
Well, right? No, real computers.
So it's couple boxes
have an account, an Apple account, download the game, but don't actually open it. And the developer was an unanonymous developer, unfortunately.
I mean, it's kind of partly the problem. I mean, it's clearly it's something happening because everyone's like jumping around. But the problem is a lot of this stuff has been anonymous, so it's very difficult to judge, exactly where the partly if it's true, because if it's anonymous, obviously anyone will be making stuff up and there's no kind of comeback.
It's been a lot of anonymous people talking to us, though. Obviously, we know who they are, but most of them anyway. But a lot of people have been saying about it. And we do sort of hear words about it on the sly in the smoky backroom offices. This is one of it's tough to pursue. I wonder, why are they all... wanting to remain anonymous?
Well, because Apple have threatened, since this all came around, to kick anyone out of the App Store who's been found guilty of this. And I think a lot of the people that have been in contact with us, so they claim have mistakenly used these services, because it would appear some of them advertise in a way that, like some of the legitimate promo tools, in that they say they will promote the app so it gets into the top 25.
Mike was saying earlier that there was one of them in particular that we will talk about a little bit more in detail in a second, was saying that it did stuff for like Nimblebit and big companies. Nimblebit and stuff said they'd never use this, and they're not actually sure why they're using their name on the website.
Exactly. I mean, you do. This is when you get to this kind of like ridiculous. If everything's anonymous and people, some people were lying for commercial reasons, and some people might be trying to drop. I mean, certainly I've had a conversation. We just took beforehand off the air about someone saying to me, "Oh, this well-known publisher's using it," and I actually was just talking to someone in the publisher, and they're like, no, "Of course we're not using it," but these other guys are. But they didn't tell me. So the whole thing becomes a little bit like,
No, nobody wants to admit.
No one wants to say anything. And someone you know, did actually point out some games to me, and that's, and I checked them out, and they looked like they could have been, but they completely weren't. So unless you actually have, you know, the analytics kind of level of seeing what's going on from an App Store point of view, which obviously only Apple do, then, you know, it's a little bit just like kind of name calling, really.
It's worth noting that Apple sent this warning out to developers saying to not manipulate the App Store charts the day after we ran the story.
That's the thing. It's definitely, I mean, from what I heard originally, so going kind of back in time, is obviously, as you said, there are different promotional kind of legitimate, you know, promotional tools people can use. So there's like the free app a day kind of services. There's lots of those where they just have a big group of people and they go, this game was paid, now it's free, download it. I mean, those have worked really well for a number of years. And there's other ones where you can kind of like incentivize people to buy, to download stuff and watch videos and encourage them to download stuff. So all that kind of stuff is there and legitimate, if sometimes seen as like a little part of the gray areas. And I think from what I've gathered is because these bot guys have come in and just, they've been so successful, they've kind of reduced the efficiency of the kind of market that's already there. So some of those guys in that market have kind of been a bit annoyed. So they've been complaining to Apple saying, well, my business is legitimate. You know, I'm promoting apps. People are paying for me. It's like an advertising business. And now I can't get results because these kind of, you know, criminals are coming and doing stuff. So I think it's a massive issue for Apple, and various people I've been talking to are suggesting that actually it's quite difficult for Apple to work this kind of stuff out, just because it's, you know, they might not have the tools for starters. And the other thing is, they don't really want to go around banning a lot of people, because that, you know, you'll probably ban some people who are legitimate, and then it will get in the press and stuff. So I think it is quite a difficult problem.
Of course, we chased up one advertiser that we were told may be involved in these shenanigans, the botnet ones. Who they denied it, of course. But they did reveal something else quite interesting. It was topdealapps.com. Keith, what did they reveal?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there have been two really interesting kind of developments from this. The first one that you're hinting at is that instead of using bots, which they obviously think would get them into trouble, because that was the initial hype around the story, that these weren't, you know, genuine downloads because you weren't real people. They claim to have over 200,000 accounts in the US, real people who've signed up, who download the app when instructed, and then I think they get some kind of money, a small amount I assume, for doing so. And obviously the idea that the more they download, the more money they bill. But to check that these people have downloaded the right app, they have to share their iTunes user account details with this company, which surely, even though I've never read the however many page document the agreement you signed with Apple is, I'm sure that breaks a user agreement to share your details, and is a massive security loop for Apple. If, you know, 200,000 accounts, that's just one company. So, you know, there are several apparently doing this. So how many people willingly have shared their account details? Who knows? I think the other interesting thing is that of the couple of the developers I've spoken to who've talked about their experience using these services, albeit, so they claim, mistakenly at the beginning, is that while it did, they both claimed that it did get their app into the top 25, as soon as it finished, obviously this just runs until the app gets to the top 25, there was no tail. There was the idea of getting into the top 25 is, as you kind of said, Will, that people see the top 25 and think, oh, that looks good, I'll download that. And so the idea is that these people get in the top 25 and then legitimate people start downloading their apps. But both of the two that have come forward to me this week have said that didn't happen. So they got into the top 25 and then they just bombed straight out again. So it makes you wonder. I mean, the claim is that one of the guys, not the Top Deal Apps guy, but another site which has been accused of doing this, is making 50 grand a day, US dollars, from this. But it makes you wonder, though, if that's the account that people are having, that they're doing this and their apps are getting in the top 25 in the US, but then not actually getting any real downloads from it, making any money from it, why all these developers are still doing it. I can't, you know, I can't blame developers for doing this, I have to say. It's a real tough market. It's only getting worse. And there are some real decent games that get nowhere simply because they just can't get the attention. So I wouldn't blame anyone for trying to get some attention.
Although equally, it is so I mean, it's kind of this idea about whether they knew about how it happened or not. But people aren't really stupid. If you know someone can guarantee something, you know, people, developers should be very careful about doing anything that's going to get them banned from Apple. If you're banned from Apple, then you are, you know, in most cases, that's it.
I wouldn't
let you back on there. So
wouldn't want to speak on their behalf, but I suggest that they probably knew it wasn't entirely a legitimate thing.
I don't think they're so important now, but about a year ago, there were a whole, maybe 18 months ago, there were a whole bunch of sites that basically did, they were kind of, they seemed to be very close to the line that you signed up to them and they'd say, this is our, you know, download this paid game. And they would give you like internal currency within their market that then you could. No, they didn't. They just paid you. They paid you back in iTunes. So say there was like a $5 game, you bought it, and then you had to take a screenshot of your. You didn't let them obviously look at your iTunes account. You took a screenshot of your receipt, and you had to do a comment, and you had to give the. You had to just give them your iTunes username so they could check that you'd written a review of it as well, yeah. And then they might pay you. I can't remember like. $1 or something back. So it wasn't you weren't getting it completely up front, or you were getting like some money back. And there were a few people trying to do that. I mean, it never took off because it's very important. It's possible to get, you know, the volume of like 10,000 people who are all going to do it in the next hour kind of thing. But there's always people trying to do something. But apparently someone else was telling me, I don't know if this is true. But the Android chart, if we're allowed to talk about that, the Android market, the chart there isn't driven by downloads at all. So the assumption I assume is it's driven by activity. They're looking at analytics when people are actually playing games.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I don't know why Apple don't do that, because I wrote an opinion piece for Biz, and the whole point of what I kind of understand it is that it isn't as bad as some people suggest, because it isn't like when record companies used to be found guilty of buying their own records to try and get the top 40, because people have heard the songs and they go and buy them once they've heard them. So you think people are buying songs they genuinely like, whereas I think with apps, most purchases, I would still say, even if you've checked out a few screenshots or you might have read someone's review, you're still kind of buying in the hope, or even downloading free apps in the hope that you'll like it. The charts aren't a representative of what games are liked or even what games are played. They're just a representative of how well these games have managed to appeal to the market. So I don't think it's such a crime to then say, right, well, we can get you a bit of attention on there, because it is just a promotion platform.
And then, I mean, the problem's obviously just the free chart, because as soon as someone's paying for something, then there's a transaction that it's very hard to kind of like game. It's always the free chart that's the one that ends up being problematic.
Keith, it's interesting that you actually raised that, because I've talked to a couple of different iOS developers, and there was an excellent piece in one of the trade magazines recently where one of the creators was basically saying that the most important thing that you can have in your game is the icon. And I think that actually ties into what you were saying, you know, in so much as people just download it and find out later on whether or not it's any good. But if I can point out two quite obvious things. First, this kind of proves cheaters never prosper, because of that whole tail end, you know, they're not really getting anything out of it. And two, why do you think no one from the general public, one of these, you know, 200,000 people who have given over their account details, why do you think that we haven't really heard from them, or haven't, you know, like for example, I guess what I'm trying to say is, to set up a service like this, you need to find 200 people, like you need to find 200,000 accounts, right? So you either need to advertise on the web, which is searchable and therefore findable by, you know, brilliant journalists like Mike Rose, or you send out an email. And nobody's reported on that kind of thing.
I wouldn't be. There are people who are idiotic enough to do this, to hand over their accounts. I wouldn't be surprised if it starts off, because I was thinking this today. How would you possibly, because for it to be a success, you've already got to have people who are going to go and download as you tell them. So I wouldn't be surprised if, to begin with, or even still, there are a number of bots are doing it, so that from day one you could say, yeah, you know, we have got a number of accounts who will download your app, and then people stumble across the website and then voluntarily join up. I really wouldn't be surprised if it's a mixture of the two, because there are people who will do it, who are incredibly app happy and will download anything when told, and thinking, well, I'm getting a dollar or a few cents out of this. So I suspect that it's probably a combination of the two, because to be able to guarantee to base your entire business on guaranteeing that you can get someone in the top 25, you're relying on 200,000 people you don't know doing what you tell them to, which I think is quite a risk anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are like backup bots, or when they started there are bots, or maybe they're entirely bots. It's, I think it's just ridiculous that he's admitted that he does have 200,000 account discs.
Although equally the other kind of like the outcome of Peter's point is he may be completely lying.
Yeah.
He's actually got 10.
If it is a lie, if it's a lie, and it could well be, it's a really stupid lie, because he's landed himself, I think, in a whole lot more. Because technically, you could say, from his point of view, if it is bots, he's not actually doing anything that Apple can get to him about. I mean, it's not an amazing business, but I don't think he's technically breaking any law by having bots download something. I think by having a business based around using other people's use account, he's not going to go to jail or anything, but I think Apple would seek to take action in some way. But so by trying to cover up the idea of having bots, by admitting to having 200,000 details of other people's accounts, I think is a really stupid lie. It's 10 times worse. So the whole thing is like it's a big can of worms at the moment.
Well, I'm going to move the topic on to a slightly related one. But this one happened earlier. This one happened at the tail end of last week, if I remember rightly. No, it happened 3 days ago. God, 3 days feels like a long time this week. Temple Jump clone. What was it called? Temple Jump. Temple Run's the other one. Temple Jump, the clone of Temple Run, has been removed from the App Store. So has 68 other apps.
I mean, I kind of felt a little bit. And we kind of had a debate on some some developers had a debate. Actually, the developers behind Temple Run, who were obviously slightly narked that a game that clearly, well, from a certain point of view, was kind of a pretending to be their game. Although I did point out, you know, If you played the game, it was completely different. The problem was they didn't put any screenshots of the game up. They just had like an Indiana Jones type graphic kind of thing, and the logo they used was clearly just a different coloured version of the Temple Run one. But when I asked one of the developers, how do you know if someone's cloning your game? She said, well, it's just like porn. When you see porn, you know it's porn. It was just kind of like quite a good kind of comeback, really. But I did feel a little bit sorry for the guy that, you know, obviously there's no reason that someone can't release a game called Temple Jump. I mean, you know, just because you have a game called Temple Run doesn't mean that you own we had a little bit of that years ago with the doodle of the guys and the Doodle Jump and whether you could have diddle something else. And but I think that's pretty much worked out now, that, you know, you can call a game Temple something else. It was the icon that was kind of the issue, I think.
Well, I mean, I mean, the name thing, I mean, you want to bring that up, then we can talk about, you know, scrolls and Notch. I mean, like, things.
But yeah, but it's different. I mean, but there's no way Apple's not going to let anyone else for the next year call their game Temple something, is it? I mean, clearly that's... So I did feel... I mean, I would have, if there's just one guy and released a game called Temple Jump, and he's like obviously trying to be a little bit between the lines, and, you know, I would have felt a little bit sorry for him. But unfortunately, he also had a game called Plants vs. Zombie and various other angry bird thing. It's like, actually, obviously, you're chancing your arm a little bit there. I think he was from Eastern Europe as well. So, obviously, we're saying that people from Eastern Europe are trying to do that.
I think that's what you were hinting at, though.
Careful what I say.
Too late.
My Russian friends. Very quickly, there's another one as well, though, and this was a really odd one, because it was called Pixel Story, and it was, so Pixel Story sounds like the Tiny Tower, does it? Nothing at all. So you'd be confused by the fact you could try to buy one and you bought the other. Okay. Plus the fact it was a free game. But when you looked at it, it was like if you played it, the gameplay mechanics was exactly the same, almost like, you know, the menu and everything, the UI was exactly the same, but it was a complete reskin. It was really nicely done. It was like a gothic underworld kind of thing, where instead of building a tower upwards, you built like a dungeon downwards. But it was odd, because it was, you know, I obviously now it was just released at the wrong time, and everyone was out looking for this kind of stuff, and someone mentioned it, and then obviously Nimblebit were kind of like on Twitter going, oh, I can't believe it's happening again, kind of thing. But I did feel a little bit sorry for him, because at least they had done unless you, I don't know if they've done automatically somehow reskinned the art and stuff, but it looked like they'd done, you know, they've done something different at least. They weren't overly trying to promote their game to an existing fan base.
Talking of an existing fan base, the latest, I don't even know if it's the latest now, actually, because there's been quite a few rumours this week. Like, never ending. The latest DigiTimes rumour, anyway, is that iPhone 5 is going to be unveiled at the WWDC.
Which is not really a great grand surprise, is it?
No, I guess it's a bit of a surprise. Because
they're always announced then, aren't they?
No, they weren't announced then last year.
When was the iPad 2 announced then?
No, iPhone 5 I'm talking about.
Sorry, iPhone 5, sorry, miles away. Okay,
iPad 3, that latest rumour is that it's going to be announced in March.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That'll be GDC then, won't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, GDC, WWDC.
WWDC is not in March.
Oh, sorry. Well, they'll have an event during GDC, but not be GDC because it's Apple.
Yeah, well, in the last couple of years, they've had GDC, which you say is the Game Developers Conference, which is held over here in San Francisco. And for the last couple of years, Apple have had pretty much in the same street as where the Game Developers Conference is. They've had their own kind of media show. Although last year they had one and then didn't mention games at all, which was slightly a wasted kind of a opportunity.
Well, this one puts the iPhone 5 in at WWDC, which early June.
Summertime, that sounds sort of just about right.
There was a kind of a feeling, wasn't there, that obviously the 4S was a kind of like the Milky Way of iPhones, one you can eat in between Mars bars and meals and stuff.
Wow. So never heard of that.
It's made up. It's sort of can't remember. There's a anyway, it doesn't matter. you remember Milky Way chocolate bar?
Yeah, I
love Milky Way.
The whole tagline was you could eat them between meals and not ruin your appetite.
Lies.
Really?
When I was a
They were meant to be don't fill you up. The red car and the blue car to race.
That's quite a clever angle to take for snack food. Because, I mean, pretty much every snack food doesn't fill you up. But this one's like play. Anyway, sorry. I'm admiring the I didn't know that.
Yes, you did.
I didn't.
Everybody knew that. Milky Way doesn't fill you up. Lighter, so you can eat them all the time.
Oh, yeah. I remember the lighter bit. Yeah,
this podcast is brought to you by.
And yeah, so if you want to send some free packets of Milky Way across,
we should actually try and do that. By the way, we should actually try and get to a year's supply of Milky Ways out of this podcast.
I prefer Whispers if that's possible.
They're horrible.
If we can target Cadbury's, I'll be more up for that.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. And in sort of AAA news.
Batteries. What?
In AAA news, Duracell, do you want to send me some free? Anyway, Make Something Unreal competition this year. Epic Games' sort of competition where developers make things in the Unreal Engine and they win prizes.
Money,
and also they normally get released, don't they?
Yeah.
But this year, they've got the rights to the Fighting Fantasy series of books. From the 80s and 90s and
scary,
probably one in the 21st century. But yes, and four studios are working on one book each to try and make an Unreal game for iOS.
Which is kind of slightly ironic because there have been Final Fantasy games, fighting fantasy games for iOS, haven't there?
Yes, there has. In fact, I recommended one to someone the other day.
Well, I reviewed one, so I reviewed the first one.
And spoilers, whoever gets the Warlock of Firetop Mountain wins.
Well, Warlock of Firetop Mountain is one of them. Although Deathtrap Dungeon was pretty...
Yeah, that's the best one. Deathtrap Dungeon, yeah.
I disagree, sir.
Well, I mean...
I like the one with the evil scientist guy in it. What was that called? That's the one I had. And it had a cover on it.
Sci-fi one?
Yeah, weird scientist guy who wanted to experiment on your brain, and that was the one that would just scare me.
Did anyone have the Mad Max style post-apocalyptic one,
where you had to
find fuel for your car and kept breaking down? And you had to go up against like people, and that was really good. It was really hard that one actually, because it just kept getting slaughtered. Unless I cheated, which I did.
Everyone cheated. No one played those really, surely.
There should definitely be cheats enabled in all four of these games, so that for the real fighting fantasy.
But the slightly weird thing about it is, it was a very UK European centric thing. I didn't think it was like a big US thing. Really.
Yeah, then wasn't there one really Choose Your Own Adventure? Wasn't there? That was a success one in the US, I thought.
I don't know, but it always got, yeah, they're sort of kind of quite a big divide. Obviously, Americans were a bit more into D&D, kind of pure D&D.
But Choose Your Own Adventure is weird though. That one was like weird, sort of. It wasn't really RPG at all. It was just not even adventures half the time.
sounds like your alcohol-free beer.
Yeah, exactly. It does. Not adventurous, not fun.
Appointment with Fear, that's the one I used to... Yeah, that's what used to scare me. I've just found it on Google now.
Used to scare you?
Yeah, the cover. It's a horrible cover.
Hang on, what was that one? I had a really scary cover for one.
I'll show you.
Keith... Books can't be scary. Everyone
cover,
knows
the cover,
that.
The cover of this one is scary. It used to scare me.
What's some other
kids looking at it.
Oh, no, I didn't have that. There was a worse one than that.
I'm just looking at it. It's making me feel...
Has it got a...
Wow, they've got all of them here. That's the one. Freeway Fighter. That was good.
Yeah, that was. That's it. I'm going to eBay.
Anyway, welcome back. We had an edit there because we went off on one about fighting fantasy books. So finally on the news this week, Twisted Metal developer, or rather the new...
You've missed one.
Have I?
Yeah, iOS apps handing over customers' phone numbers to app makers.
Oh yeah, that one's quite big.
Yeah, you've skipped that.
I don't know if we have time to do that one.
But again, that's a weird one. That looks seems really big, and then no one seems to care less about it.
No, I know. It's really... It's disturbing. This week has been disturbing.
And I don't know. If that's been happening for so long, how come no one's talked about it before? That's really odd. I don't understand that. They've been doing it forever. And
that's the kind of story the 10 o'clock news would leap on, just to scare everyone. Your iPhones.
Well, there was that one with it where obviously they said iPhone was tracking everyone. It was just keeping a log of the GPS, wasn't it? And that was like a massive story. Everyone heard that. Did you say the BBC? But this one seems even worse. If you can get important famous people's phone numbers in San Francisco,
Yeah. Well, like the rest of the mainstream media, I'm going to move on. I'm just going to ignore that and then go straight to, hey guys, Twisted Metal developer, or rather the current Twisted Metal developer, Eat Sleep Play, are going to move over and do smartphone games, or rather iOS games, after they finish Twisted Metal on PS3. David Jaffe, who's the... Is it Jaffe or Jaffe?
Jaffe.
Jaffe. Good morning.
He's definitely not French.
Jaffe, who is the guy behind God of War and Twisted Metal, is leaving the company, though, and forming another company and probably doing a console game, but he might do an iOS game. So the company is leaving with Scott Campbell, who's the co-founder of Eat Sleep Play. They're doing an iOS game, likely. So that's interesting. Another... actually, they're more indie AAA almost, aren't they? They're not that big, Eat Sleep Play, in terms of personnel numbers.
No, but I mean, no one needs to be that big. I mean,
I gauge all of my I have a list of my favourite companies, and they're all sorted by number of people working for them.
How do you know how many people are working for them?
I look it up in the Hello Pages.
Are you talking just game companies here, or just general companies?
Just general companies.
You have to know how many people work for them.
Yeah, because, you know, if that many people work for them, it can't be that bad, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is just why Asda is so great, because there's so many people working for them.
I love Asda. They're number four in my UK regional list.
I love the quote on this article from the company that says, you could certainly reach a lot more people. That's pretty exciting for us. And it's just like... Yeah, because you've been working on a game that literally no one cares about for the last 2 years. It's like, yeah, you must be pretty stoked.
There's some actually pretty diehard Twisted Metal fans out there. Mm. I've never really liked the series. I had one on PS2, and
there are also people who, you know, jam shards of glass into their leg repeatedly, but, you know.
I think they're rare. Well, I don't know, actually. They're all...
I think that's kind of cool. I'd kind of actually prefer it if Jaffe was still at the helm, because I'd actually quite like to see what he would do with the iOS. Because also quoted in the article is, he says he has zero plans to make games like Farmville and Angry Birds. And like, it's like, what?
Is them. So it's like he literally shouts the two words.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost to say like he's hinting something.
Absolutely. But I'd love to see what his approach to the platform would be.
Bird farm.
I don't know, that reads like a slur to me. It's more like,
oh yeah, it's definitely a slur.
I have no intention to make games like that, so bugger off mobile kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. But it's to me it's like, well, come at me, bro, then like make something cool for the platform. Like, do something cool. Like, if you think that that's awful, then do something different.
Laying down the gauntlet.
Yeah. I'd rather play Angry Birds.
You like Angry Birds.
I'd rather play Angry Birds than...
I would rather play Angry Birds than God of War. So I'm
God,
completely...
Yeah, me too.
No.
I'm with you on that.
I can't stand God of War.
What?
I can't stand any of those horrible third-person hack and run around rubbish things.
I just don't like misogyny.
What? What is wrong with you two? Anyway, before I lose it, let's go on to...
turn this week.
Let's go to the midweek releases. Coming up on the midweek releases, we've got Dogs, Ragdolls, and Corpses.
That's probably the most logical one you've ever done.
I didn't try and blend them this time. I'm a bit disappointed with myself, actually. Anyway, this week's midweek releases. Let's not start with the Jalingo one. We'll save that for later. let's start with Dodonpachi, Blissful Death.
Yeah.
This should be good. Yes. So, how do I have the sound on? There we go. So this is coming out for iPhone. Now when you're listening, it's out for iPhone. There's six different shit. Well, you know what this is going to be like. It's a bullet hell shooter. And it's... is the arcade machine 10 years old? Or is that just Cave being cryptic with their videos?
Dodonpachi itself is... the series itself is about a decade old. So that I think that might be what they're referring to. But Blissful... the original Dodonpachi didn't have a subtitle. So I think
actually
the original
Dodonpachi was called Dodon.
No, it was called Donpachi.
Donpachi. Well, I knew it was one
half. If you want to try and out nerd me on one of my favourite subjects, that's fine.
Well, the original one was called. See, I can edit though. I have the power, Peter. So the original one was anyway, Blissful Death. Then it looks very similar to the previous games, but the Dodonpachi. But of course, it's going to be good fun if it's like that. There's only one game mode, I think, this time round. I don't think there's a special smartphone mode. I think it's just arcade. I need to check that. But which is a shame. I like the smartphone mode because it wasn't really a smartphone mode. It didn't do anything really major in terms of how the game was laid out. It just the whole of the gameplay mechanics changed in terms of getting high scores, which I thought was quite clever. So it's available for £2.99. Six different chips, four different difficulty levels, lots of stuff. Practice mode looks good. There we go. That's quite cheap for a cave game. Anyway, Ragdoll Blaster 3.
Three.
The first one got a gold award.
Yep.
The second one
got a silver award.
So do you think this one's going to be a bronze?
I think it has to, doesn't it?
Well, actually, good point. There we go. It's a bronze award.
I've not played it, but I've seen. It's a lot. I mean, I think the first one was like the first one of those games to really kind of be a success. The second one, which I reviewed. So I remember it's kind of a sequel, kind of quite nice, done a bit more artwork.
They've really changed the
graphics. This one
is really different.
This one's like a little bit planet kind of thing, isn't it? It's a really much nicer graphics.
You couldn't do how it was before three times, I wouldn't have thought, but this looks rather different.
Yeah, it looks quite fun actually.
Not many iPhone games get to three, do you? You don't often see three.
They're not like been bashing them out. I mean, it's been like
very early.
Yeah, they were.
At least the original, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
I've changed my mind. Maybe it's going to be a silver. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe it's going to be.
I did quite like the simplicity kind of the start of the original one. It was quite
but I think
you reviewed the first one, didn't you, Keith?
Yeah.
Sorry, I want to interrupt here and say one of the reviews that's on the customer review section. 69p, by the way, everyone. Awesome as the day is wide.
That's brilliant.
Such a wide day today.
Yeah. Oh, this day's a bit wide. Anyway. So there we go, Ragdoll Blaster 3 looks good. Corpse Party, Blood Covered Repeated of Fear. What? Oh, is that the real name?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the first one came out, didn't it? Before Christmas, so I guess it's
I reviewed this one on PSP, and no, it's not a sequel. It's the same game. So basically, there are three things that you need to know about this. Well, obviously, I'm sure I've just overtaken what Will was going to say. And yeah, but anyway,
don't say what the thing beginning with P. Like, don't look on the App Store.
Oh, okay. No. Okay, so basically, it's a horror game set in a school, and you it's quite gory, but it's very much based on literature and absorbing content and conversations and that sort of thing. Three things you need to know. One, it says that it's got 20 hours of gameplay. That's because you need to repeat it over and over and over and over and over again, because it will not let you progress if you fail out the chapter. And each chapter takes about 2 or 3 hours to complete the first time that you do it. And then subsequent playthroughs, there's literally no point in playing them because they're not scary anymore. Number two, it's in a 16-bit top-down style rather than what the trailer makes out. The trailer makes it look like a really incredible like animated adventure game. No, it looks like RPG Maker. And in fact, I believe the original Doujin game was actually made in RPG Maker. And number three, we've got on here that it says that the title is entirely in Japanese.
Yes, completely Japanese.
So it is entirely based on text, and you need to know what the text is, because people go, you should go here. And if you can't read Japanese...
Get out of town.
Yeah. Like,
even if you can read Japanese, you're going to have to pay £17.49 to play.
What? Okay, I hadn't even seen that. Wow.
You what?
£17.49.
Wow. How on earth are they doing that?
That is ambitious.
That's not ambitious. That's blind stupid.
Who's done that?
That's
5PB Inc.
Is that the most expensive game on the App Store?
Yeah, I think so.
I feel a new story coming on.
I know that this isn't, you know, that podcast, but honestly, just buy it on another format. Like, that's too much money for a game that you will not enjoy in any capacity.
Okay.
The story itself is actually really, really good. It's just the when you're playing the game, it's rubbish. So,
well, it's not rubbish, it's just Japanese, so yeah, even the story won't be good. So there we go.
This is the most racist podcast we've done.
Well, no, I mean, it won't be any good because you won't be able to read Japanese.
Will hates Japan and everything it stands
Japan's
for.
Japan's story is terrible. Can't stand them. I only read English stories about flags and bulldogs. so there we go. Don't buy that game. On that iPad.
Even if you do want to buy it, they're presumably going to have to drop the price at some point.
They can't possibly sell it for £17.40.
It's in Japanese!
On the iPad this week, we've got Euphloria HD, which I'm going to talk a little bit about later. Not that much, though, because I've played like two levels of the iPad version. But I can talk more because I know the controls now, and I played the PC version quite a bit when it was first released, so I can talk about it. And that is available for £2.99. On Universal release, we've got Raid Leader.
Raid Leader!
Raid Leader! Turn off the sound. It's Crescent Moon Publishing. And who is the developer?
Red Zebra.
This looks fun. Get three different classes. You wander around.
As much as I do like Crescent Moon games, but their games are all broadly exactly the same in terms of the kind of, you know, it's like a kind of like a dungeon RPG and action.
They
and,
look good though.
No, I mean, it does look, but it, I don't know, equally, I don't know, I'm not sure. I think for a certain kind of fan, okay, this is what I'm trying to say. Those kind of games, you know, if you do a niche one, then they sit very well in that niche, and people who like this kind of games really like them. But there is, you know, I think they can, and certainly ones that Crescent Moon have published, because normally they work with a developer, different developers. You know, they can go very broad. I think this one to me seems to be quite niche. I think just in terms of the way it plays.
Looks cool to me. I mean, it's like a real time fantasy fighting thing. It says real time strategy at one point. So
yeah,
I guess you.
I mean, the bit, although it kind of has RPG elements. The big thing is you kind of like buying spells for the you have like the three typical classes. So you have like a, you know, the melee, the archer, and the kind of healer or mage or something. And so, but instead of choosing one of them classes, you have all three of them on the screen. And so that you're kind of basically you're kind of buying their kind of skills, and then their obviously skills work over time. So you're kind of waiting for them to power up, so you can use the big melee guy can do his big thing, and the healer can heal everyone. That kind of thing.
I hate those kind of games.
I mean, yeah. I quite like them, but I kind of think it's quite, as I say, they can end up feeling quite similar. I mean, like, the problem I always have with those games is I love playing as the archer, but the archer always is terrible if someone comes up and bashes him. So you always end up playing the melee character because that's always the easiest one to do. And there's very few games I've seen.
It sort of looks actually a little bit like a slightly nicer version, well, looking version of, what's that game? That good one where you controlled a team of people at once and drags them to move. Balls, what's it called? I played it on Android.
Balls.
That's not called Balls. it's called something else. Damn it, it is. It's basically like that game.
Balls. Good?
Leave me for a second. I will, I'll find it. Go on. Oh, no, wait, you've stopped. Yeah, so 69p. Pinball Arcade is out this week, which actually has real pinball tables. Just it's a pleasant surprise seeing that.
I mean, real pinball tables.
Well, faithful recreations of famous
based
tables.
On physical ones. Okay, right.
No, right, fine. We've got virtual tables based on real.
I didn't know what you meant.
Well, it's an app. It's not going to have a table
inside.
Well,
I don't know.
anyway, so yeah, you got these proper real tables. It looks quite nice. I like pinball games.
Me too. It looks really good, actually. It's got Ripley's Believe It or Not table on it, which is like pretty, like, well regarded. I mean, it's not the most well regarded, obviously, but like, it, amongst pinball enthusiasts, it's a decent table. It's a decent pin, as some might say.
Well, I'm still looking for that game. Damn, you didn't say anything more. yes.
Well, I can. Well, okay, never mind.
So yeah, that's out. What? How much is it? Is it going to be? I might get this. 69p.
I'm sure I've played a Java game like this that takes real tables in this way. Maybe even called this name.
You played a Java game.
A Java game which had real. The whole thing of it is that it was real tables. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
It's got Black Hole as well. Oh, this is making me. Oh, this is stroking a certain part of my body.
Your arm.
That's usually Will's job while he's recording the podcast.
Burn. I still haven't found this game. It's really annoying. I know it's been reviewed on Xperia. Or was it? No, it wasn't. It was reviewed on Android. Battle Heart, I think it was called. Does that ring a bell?
Battle Hearts? That's not a pinball game.
No, fancy one.
Is it like a 2D? No, that's not Android, though, is it? That's iOS. It's 2D.
That's on Android as well. It's not a sky side scroller.
2D Battle Hearts, isn't it?
Battle Heart.
Wait, hang on. Maybe it isn't that one. It's Battle Something. Hang on.
I think that is the one you mean, isn't it? I'm looking at
it. It's where you get like a party of people and you drag them to attack. Yeah, it is Battle Heart.
Yeah.
It's basically the same as Battle Heart, that other game we were talking about.
Battle Heart looks nicer.
Battle Heart is good, actually.
It's kind of side scroll. I mean,
it's not. Yeah. It doesn't move the screen. The screen doesn't move.
Okay, but it's whatever. Yeah, it's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, no, that reviewed really well. Yeah,
it was really good. Anyway, enough of that. That's the new release. Is it? No, hang on. Before we move on. Also, Billy Goat's game that you played, Keith, the other day. You were bribed with a coffee. Yeah, you're not reviewing the game when it comes out.
No.
Yes, Billy Goat's game Outfoxed is out this weekend for some reason. Sorry. Unusual timing. But yeah, the 3D Fox 'em up. I'm gonna go. Starring who does the voice?
Oh, don't ask me to look now.
Who does the voice of the Fox, Keith?
He's a sports commentator, man, in Ireland.
It is.
Got the name to hand.
But anyway, yeah, so the Outfoxed is also out a bit later this week. So there we go. Oh, more tables coming in DLC for years to come. Wow.
Can't wait.
Real Pinball is out on pretty much every system. Have you gone to the right to the end of this video?
Yeah.
It's out on every system you can think of.
I've just bookmarked their official website to contact them later.
Anyway, so yes, so that's all out. So there we go. What have we been playing? Let's go there.
Let's go there.
What we've been playing!
Right, I'm going to start.
You haven't done your usual, let's pretend we're in some strange...
Don't have time, I can see the clock. Euphloria HD. I played two levels in iOS. But, you know, now I know the controls, and the controls are as you'd expect from the game. There's no surprises there. Anyway, Euphloria is an indie game from about 2 years ago, in which you play seedlings, or rather the person who manages the seedlings, that live on tiny planets, and you basically have to send your seedlings out and take other planets while other people are trying to do the same thing, or the computer is. And it's basically a very fancy version of that game that I think we've all played, whose name I can't remember. Can you believe that? You know that one where you have like a number, and it goes up slowly, like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's like you're on the menopause or something.
And I haven't got any idea what you're talking about. I'm much better. Like, there's another game that's on iOS already where you have planets and then their numbers tick up over time, and then you press the planet to take over a planet with a lower number. But anyway, it's like that, but with seedlings, which look a little bit like fleas when you zoom out to see the game area, which isn't, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, that. It's okay. It got a lot of plaudits because it has...
It looks very nice, doesn't it? When you just look at a video of it, it's like...
It's sort of fractal-like.
Was it a PC game? It was an IGF winner or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. The thing is, it's one of those games where I suspect a lot of people will initially like it and then realise there's not really that much to it. It's sort of a strategy game, but it's not much strategy in it. And it's not quite... It's a relaxing game, but it's not actually that relaxing. It's sort of a game which has all the components that make people like these sort of indie games. It has the atmospheric music, has the quite pretty graphics, very minimalist, very nice looking sort of organic feel to it. And it has a reasonably under destroyed idea. There are plenty of games that do exactly the same as this, but you know, not quite in the same way. However, I find it quite boring. It's not very exciting. There's some nice elements to it. The fact that the planets have different stats, so that when you create a tree, which creates new seedlings that you can use, they're basically your soldiers. It creates a tree and it produces seedlings of that quality of the planet. It's quite a nice new twist. It's a bit boring, though. If you want a really nice, sort of relaxing, sort of arty indie game, I'd go for Osmos, personally.
Really?
Yeah, I like Osmos.
I think kind of part of the... When you get to the level of these kind of quite abstract, you know, say, indie artistic games, I think they can be... It can be very, like a very personal taste thing about what you find interesting and what you don't. I mean,
Well, to be fair, this one's unlike most other of these sort of indie games, this game is an idea that has been done many times before. It's just added like one feature on top. That's my personal opinion. If you haven't played games like this, because I've played about three,
But I find with partly with these games is you don't necessarily, it's not like a something you want to play all the way through. You kind of just want to go, oh, I'll have a bit of a go on it for like half an hour, and it's, you know, depending on the price obviously, but I never particularly play them all the way through or complete them. I just go, oh, I get the idea of it. I don't want to really want to spend
hours. The problem of all of the games that do this is it's too simple. Like it's literally just waiting for numbers to build up and then clicking the number that's bigger than your opponent and then moving them across.
Yeah.
It's like, that's fine for the most part. And all these games try and mix it up by, you know, making different starting positions so you can't combine your numbers. But they all boil down to one thing, which is whoever has the most planets at halfway point wins. There is no way you cannot get... there's no way you can't win, basically. Mm. Which, I mean, it's fine. It's quite enjoyable, but I think $2.99 is a bit pricey. I paid like 15 quid for it when it was on PC, or 10 quid. But then I was horribly disappointed. So there we go. Right, what's everyone else been playing? Anyone want to volunteer?
Have you two guys not played anything this
week? I've got something to talk about literally about 2 minutes, but if you want to go first.
Yeah. Well, no, let's hear you out then, Keith.
Well, literally about 10 minutes before the podcast started, I'm playing an iPad game called End Night, which is a kind of zombie try and stay alive and not die.
I thought it was going to be like an action chess game.
It's got a really lovely icon, actually, of like a blood print hand on a wall, which looks really classy, actually. But and the game is really, it's really quite slickly presented. It's got kind of nice eerie music, and it's kind of top down 3D view, so you're kind of wandering around. The premise seems to be that you can kind of, your town's been infected, and zombies are kind of everywhere, and you've managed to get one, and you're taking blood samples to try and work out, I assume, what's happened. And so you, at least in this initial level, I don't know what happens from then on, you have to run around and get other blood samples. I think you've got to get 25. I can't remember. I might have made that number up. But it tells you at the beginning you've got to get it. So the idea is it's obviously night time. And so you're kind of running around from house to house. And there are various kind of bodies as kind of left around that you can take blood from. But you're not kind of meant to be running around blind. There's a map. Which, as well as looking for blood samples, you also, because every time you get bitten or whatever, your health starts going down. So you have to try and find health packs. And if you get bitten, you then have to go and find a bath to wash yourself to stop yourself from getting infected. Which is quite an interesting way. I'm not sure if zombies do ever attack, that will work. But if you get, it then starts flashing up, you need to find a bathroom to go and wash yourself. Quite amusing, actually. The one I found actually had a zombie lying in it, so I wasn't. I still managed to wash myself in there, which must have been quite interesting. what's really disappointing is that it has that element. So it's kind of built up, and it feels really slick, and it relies on the map. And the map, when you open it, looks like something someone has put together in 2 seconds on Photoshop. It's incredibly confusing. It's just a load of squares with someone who's literally typed. The developer, typed random. It doesn't seem to be any "you are here" kind of element to it. It's just like a picture of a load of squares with, that are obviously buildings, and then little marks all over it in different colours where the blood samples are, where health packs are. But because you have no idea, well, at least I can see this, it might change as I play on, but I can't see any way of seeing where I actually am. It kind of makes the whole thing redundant. So I'd spent my 10 minutes, whatever, just kind of wandering around uselessly, trying to find things and dying. Because then obviously you get trapped and these zombies start appearing, and some of them move quicker than others. And you kind of, and it's quite, the controls feel a bit clunky at the moment. Obviously, you kind of move with a thumbstick on the left and you attack. You get to choose one of three weapons at the start, a shotgun, or a pistol, or an axe. And basically, the only one you kind of want is an axe, because you run out of ammo quite quickly unless you manage to find some. And aiming seems to be rather difficult, whereas the axe just seems to kill anyone who's in the vicinity. But you still manage to get injured incredibly easy because you're kind of running into walls and stuff.
But do you get injured by running into walls?
you would do in real life, just as you... because you wouldn't be able to clean an infection by getting in the bath. But it seems a bit hit and miss to me. It seems like someone's had a very grand idea and then
kind of the map is just terrible. It's just, it doesn't fit in. Everything's really slick. You know, the opening credits and the music and everything. It's already feels like something quite big budget. And then you have this really odd map that looks like it was one they just made up at the last minute. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. It's iPad only, which I'm not really sure why, because it doesn't really feel like it should be iPad only. It seems like it would be perfectly fine on iPhone, but screen size, I don't think is a real issue. But yeah, at the moment, it's a bit hit and miss. So we'll see how long I manage to get through without losing my patience and dying every few minutes. So.
Peter, have you been losing your patience and dying this week?
No, I have not. In retaliation for the torrent of abuse that I got the last time I was on the show, I've been playing a game that is diametrically opposite to Hello Kitty, whatever the hell it was. I forgot what it is, what it was now.
Oh, it was pretending you didn't know anything about it.
You suddenly turned into the cool kid.
Yeah, you about it last week.
Where did your lunchbox go, Peter?
Oh, it got stolen by the bullies.
I've been playing The Secret of Grisly Manor, which is by Fire Maple Games, and it's currently on promotion. It's free at the moment because they're pushing The Lost City. And it's an adventure, I suppose, in the vein of like a Myst or a Riven or something like that. You play a character. I've no idea really who you play. You go to your grandfather's house and look around, and it's abandoned and it's slightly creepy, and someone has set up this chain of puzzles for you to figure out that will open more puzzles and let you do more things and explore more parts of the house. And it's very short. It took about half an hour, 45 minutes, that kind of thing.
That's quite short.
Yeah.
Did you feel shortchanged?
For free? No. Oh, for free. I mean,
so
I think
what's the model
is,
then? Doing it for free to promote the new game.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just that, and it's. You see, the thing is, like, I think even for like 69p, it would be worth it because the art is really lovely. It's got a really painterly scheme to it, and it kind of mixes in with like photos, and the whole design of the house is really quite interesting, and it's very kooky and very odd. Like, it's just got a very odd feeling to it, which I think is why it's been given this weird rating of having infrequent mild horror fear themes, even though it's not really scary at all. And it's a bit of a
Grisly Manor.
Yeah, that's the thing I was just about to say.
He's a bit worried already.
It's called Grisly Manor, but I believe Grisly is the name of the grandfather. Like, it's not grisly in any way. You know, there's no blood, there's no violence, there's nothing like that. It's just atmosphere.
Do you get hairdressing?
Unfortunately, pods? No. There's none of that. There is a gumball machine in there, which I found quite sweet. There's lots of little puzzles. So I kind of like having to figure out these little like color based puzzles where you have to make certain colors with a little mechanical I think it's like a globe, and you have to line up all these different colors, and that's quite pretty. And it's quite cool. It uses the screen quite well. You have to sort of touch and drag certain puzzles and, really basic, simple stuff. But it's just well put together. As I say, it is short, and it's not particularly challenging either. But you do have to keep your eye out and very much focus on what you're doing, just in case you kind of miss an object or all that sort of thing. And the sound design is really, really excellent. The only thing I would say is the ending is properly bobbins. I won't ruin it for you, but because it's worth seeing if it's going to take you, half an hour, 45 minutes. But when you do play it, listeners, you will know exactly what I'm talking about, because it's the most saccharine piece of rubbish that they could possibly have come up with. But while it lasts, it's pretty good.
I like with bobbins.
Thank you. I've been rereading old Games Master magazines for my to improve my language and vocabulary at the moment.
I like the way you delivered it as well. There's lots of stress on the B's. It was quite good. Bobbins. I can't do it.
That's why I like bubble bobble as well.
Bubble bobble.
Is that everyone?
I think that's everyone.
I've not played games. I don't. You know, I don't have time to play games. I've been out at the Blackberry conference in Amsterdam. I've got time to play games.
You've been playing the game of life.
Blackberry's the future, mate. God, dear. It's got buttons on it. Everything.
All right. So John hasn't played anything. How about you, Clive?
Hello.
Keith is getting nervous now.
Oh, it sounds familiar. All this.
Yeah. So yes, thank you very much for listening this week. I've been your host, Will Wilson, and with me is Peter Willington.
Bye, everyone.
Keith Andrew.
Goodbye.
And John Jordan.
See you next week.
Yes, goodbye.
Bye-bye.